Please join me in 1 Samuel chapter 28, and we're going to restart at verse 15 in a moment. These are events that are taking place the night before the battle of Mount Gilboa. And from my chronology understanding, the exact same moment that this is taking place at Endor, just a few miles from where the Battle of Mount Gilboa will take place, David is coming back to his city of Ziklag a few days' travel to the south. So David is well distanced from King Saul at the time of his death. And I think that's very important for David's future, that he has absolutely no connection to the death of King Saul whatsoever. So you know the story. Saul has been cut off from communication with God for many years now. And he is upset about this Philistine invasion of the breadbasket, the northern breadbasket of Israel, the plain of Megiddo and the valley of Jezreel that are kind of combined together between Galilee to the north and Manasseh and Ephraim to the south. So he decides he would like to know what Samuel could do for him. Unfortunately, Samuel's been dead for several months. So Saul decides that he has no choice but to try to use a necromancer to call up Samuel. And God makes an exception and allows this to actually happen. Now, when I say he lets an exception happen, is because I think most of the time, when people think they're talking to the dead, they're actually talking to fake spirits, or they're being conned by humans taking advantage of them. But on this occasion, the necromancer is kind of freaked out, as we would say, because Samuel actually does appear and starts talking to her and giving her messages to be passed on to Saul. And this is God's way of finishing his judgment against King Saul. So verse number 1 of 1 Samuel 28, excuse me, verse 15 of 1 Samuel 28. Then Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? So why are you doing this?" Saul answered, "I am in great distress, for the Philistines are warring against me, and God has turned away from me and answers me no more, either by prophets or by dreams. Therefore, I have summoned you to tell me what I shall do." So Samuel, the dead Samuel, is his last resort. Samuel said, "Why then do you ask me, since he who is has turned away from you and become your enemy? He who is has done to you as he spoke by me, for he who is has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David, because you did not obey the voice of he who is and did not carry out his fierce wrath against Amalek. Therefore, he who is has done this thing to you this day." So you have brought this on yourself, King Saul. Your disobedience from early on in your kingdom to this very moment when you are doing something that you're not supposed to be doing, God has decided to judge you and your kingdom. And then he lets him know this specific fallout. "Moreover, he who is will give Israel also with you into the hands of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your son shall be with me," meaning they will be dead. Now, at this point in history, based on what we understand from Luke chapter 16 in particular. Dead people all go to Sheol, or the Greek term that we use is Hades, both of which have the idea of the unseen place of the dead. But this place is divided up into two areas that are separated by an impassable gulf, a barrier, if you will. One side is reserved for the righteous dead, and they are at peace and at rest. That is exactly where Samuel would be. The other place is reserved for the unrighteous dead, the ones who are awaiting final judgment and disposition to eternal hell. That is where Saul will be. But both of them will be dead and in Sheol. And that's all that Samuel is revealing to him now, is basically, you will be dead tomorrow. Not just you, but your boys that are with you and many of your soldiers because of you. Back to the text. He who is will give the army of Israel also into the hands of the Philistines. So bad news all the way around, that this is going to end tragically. Verse 20. Saul fell at once full length on the ground, filled with fear because of the words of Samuel. There was no strength in him, for he had eaten nothing all day and all night. The woman came to Saul. When she saw that he was terrified, she said to him, "Behold, your servant has obeyed you. I've taken my life into my hand, and I've listened to what you've said to me. Now, therefore, you also obey your servant. Let me set a morsel of bread before you and eat, that you may have strength when you go on your way." So she's like, "Look, I did what you told me to do, even though it's all illegal, and I know you could have me killed for it. At least let me feed you now. You need to get your strength up." And then he refused and said, "I will not eat." But his servants, together with the woman, urged him, and he listened to their words. So he arose from the earth, and he sat on the bed. And the woman had a fattened calf in the house, and she quickly killed it. And she took flour and kneaded it and baked unleavened bread of it. And she put it before Saul and his servants, and they ate. And then they rose, and they went away that night. So they're at Endor for this event, about 10 miles, I think, away from the Israeli encampment at Jezreel. So even if they were there in the middle of the night, they would have been able to eat and finish up and be back to their encampment by the wee hours of the morning of the actual battle day. That battle day is described in chapter 31, starting at verse number 1. We've already gone over the material for 29, because that was related to things happening with David down south. So let's go to the actual day of the battle of Mount Gilboa. Chapter 31, verse 1. "Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa." Now when you zero in on the terrain of this battle, the encampment of the Philistines was on a flat area in front of the hill of Morah, near the village of Shunem. And the Israelis were in a flat area near the city of Jezreel, about 4 miles to the south from Shunem. I've been here, I've seen the layout of this, and what apparently happened was the Philistines charged south toward the Israelis and began wreaking great havoc upon them. And once they broke, the Israelis retreated eastward and southward to try to get away from the pursuing Philistines. And that would have taken them along this Mount Gilboa Ridge that stretches to the southeast of the city of Jezreel. More than likely, they were trying to retreat down to a route that would allow them to head south back toward Israeli strongly held territory. But they don't make it because the judgment of God is upon them. Verse number 2. The Philistines overtook Saul and his sons, and the Philistines struck down Jonathan. Now, that's the most tragic part of this story, I think, is that Jonathan, a good and righteous man, because of his love of his father and his apparent desire to be an influence in his father's life, put him in the middle of this defeating battle on this day and got him killed. And David will grieve greatly over his death. So they struck down Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul. Now that's not all of his sons. He's got another that was not at the battle for this day. Why? We're not altogether certain. It could be that he was the reserve son, kept out of the battle just in case it went badly. Jonathan is the oldest son, and the next son that survives seems to be number two son, who was about 41 years of age. So Jonathan must have been somewhere in his early 40s, which puts Saul up into his 60s, apparently. Okay, so these three sons that were at present at the battle, they're dead, along with Dad. The battle pressed hard against Saul. The archers found him, and he was badly wounded by the archers. So they start targeting the area where they know the king of Israel is at, and he gets hit. Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and mistreat me." So Saul knows he is dead. But he would like to avoid being captured and tortured and abused and mocked and mistreated in front of the Philistine masses before he comes to that death. So he orders his lieutenant, his right-hand guy, "I need you to kill me." Apparently, Saul is weak enough at this point. He doesn't think he can do it right. So his armor bearer would not, for he feared greatly. Therefore, Saul took his own sword and fell upon it. So he, like I said, may have been weak enough. He could not thrust the sword into his own chest or properly slice his own throat. So he falls on his sword and allows that the weight of his body to end his life. Now, I think it's pretty clear that he dies at this point. There is a later story told by a man that he's the one that killed Saul. I think that man is a liar. And when we get to that story, I will remind you that I said here that I believe he's a liar, because I think Saul killed himself here on the battlefield. Verse number 5. When his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell upon his sword and died with him. So he doesn't want to take a chance of being captured either. Thus Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men on the same day together. So this is the Battle of Mount Gilboa. And on this same day, David was arriving back at Ziklag from his defeat of the Amalekite raiding party. So he's at least 3 days' travel away when Saul dies. Verse 7. When the men of Israel who were on the other side of the valley and those beyond the Jordan saw that the men of Israel had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they abandoned their cities and fled, and the Philistines came and lived in them. So this changes the dynamic between the Philistines and the Israelis. The Israelis have kept the Philistines kind of at bay during the reign of King Saul, during the military career of David. But now that Saul is dead and David is nowhere to be found in the middle of all this, the Philistines start taking over territory formerly lived in by Israelis, particularly up here in the breadbasket region of the Megiddo Plain, the Jezreel Valley, and the Jordan Valley that is a little bit south of the Sea of Galilee, all that region. Now, the Philistines seem to have had control of one of the cities in that very region already, or they have seized control of it at this moment. And that is a place called Beth Shan. Beth Shan is a few miles east and a little bit south of Jezreel. Let's see, I was trying to remember exactly how many miles. Let's see if I can pull my my map up here and do a real quick calculation for us. Let's see, it's about, looks like about 10 miles from Jezreel down to Beth Shan, and about 15 or so miles from the southern end of the Sea of Galilee down to Beth Shan. So this is what happens. Verse 8, the next day, so this is the day after the battle, when the Philistines came to strip the dead, they found Saul and his three sons fallen on Mount Gilboa. Typical procedure. After the battle is finished, you go back and take all the stuff of the losing side, and it becomes war booty. So they find King Saul and his three boys dead, and they decide that they need to be put on display. Verse 9. So they cut off his head, that is Saul's head, they stripped off his armor, and they sent messengers throughout the land of the Philistines to carry the good news to the house of their idols and to the people. They put his armor in the temple of Ashtaroth, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. So they devote Saul's armor to their goddess as a thank you for being on their side for this battle. They take his head and send it around to all the different Philistine communities as a way to say, King Saul, our enemy, is dead. And they take his body, his decapitated body, and somehow affix it to the wall of Bethshan, so that everybody that's coming in out of that city can see another example of the Philistine victory over the Israelis. Verse number 11. But when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the body of his sons from the wall of Bethshan. And they came to Jabesh, and they burned them there. And then they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree in Jabesh, and fasted 7 days. Now you might remember that Jabesh-Gilead, which is on the east side of the Jordan Valley, was the location of Saul's first military victory when he became king 20 years earlier. It's also very possibly the city of the birth of his great-grandmother. Because back when the tribe of the Benjamite was almost wiped out, the women from Jabesh-Gilead were two-thirds of the women who married the remaining Benjamites and restarted the tribe. And so it's very possible that Saul's great, maybe double great grandmother came from that town, so he was related into it as well. So it's only about 10 or so miles southeast of Bethshan. And when they hear that their hero from 20 years ago, their king, possibly their relative, has been shamed by his body being mutilated and put up on display, they fix it. They sneak in, get the bodies, bring them back, cremate them, probably because they've been mutilated, and then bury the remaining bones with honor there in their city. Now let's see what happens with David, because on the same day that the men of Jabesh-Gilead retrieved the bodies, a messenger arrives with David's encampment at Ziklag with the report on how the battle turned out. So that's where we start the second book of Samuel. 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 1. After the death of Saul, when David had returned from striking down the Amalekites, David remained 2 days at Ziklag, and on the third day, that is, the third day after he defeated the Amalekites, behold, a man came from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and dirt on his head. When he came to David, he fell to the ground and paid homage. And David said to him, "Where did you come from?" And he said, "I've escaped from the camp of Israel." And David said to him, "How did it go? Tell me." And he answered, "The people fled from the battle, and also many of the people have fallen and are dead. And Saul and his son Jonathan are also dead." So this man reports exactly what we were just talking about, that everything went badly. And most everybody's dead, and definitely Saul and his sons, specifically Jonathan, are dead. Verse number 5, "Then David said to the young man who told him, 'How do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead?'" So, you know, a reasonable thing. Are you sure it's not a rumor? Because rumors abound during wars. "How do you know for sure that both Saul and Jonathan are dead?" Verse 6, "The young man who told him said, 'By chance I happened to be on Mount Gilboa, and there was Saul leaning on his spear, and behold, the chariots and the horsemen were close upon him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me, and he called to me, and I answered, "Here I am." And he said to me, 'Who are you?' And I answered, 'I'm an Amalekite.'" Now, this is where the story gets very interesting. The guy that's talking to David is an Amalekite, not an Israeli. And he is the guy that I was referring to a while ago that I think is lying through his teeth. And the reason he's doing it is because he hopes this will get him on David's good side, because his little Amalekite brain is functioning along this idea. Saul tried to kill David, hated David, and therefore David must feel the same toward him. He will be glad to know he's dead. So I'm going to make myself David's hero. I'm going to make myself the guy who killed Saul. Because I believe Saul was definitely dead when this Amalekite found his body. You remember, we read over in 1 Samuel, the last chapter, that they came back the day after the battle and started stripping the dead. Well, this guy, I think, was there even earlier on that morning, stripping the dead, plundering the field, and he found Saul and stole some of his stuff. And then he made this story up. All right, so verse number 8, more of the story. He said to me, "Who are you?" And I answered, "I'm an Amalekite." And he said to me, "Stand beside me and kill me, for anguish has seized me, and yet my life still lingers." So I stood beside him, and I killed him, because I was sure that he could not live after he had fallen. And then I took the crown that was on his head and the armlet that was on his arm, and I brought them here to my lord. So I helped you out, sir, and here is the evidence that I killed him, and he's dead. His crown and his personalized armband. So David took hold of his clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned, and they wept, and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son, and for the people of He Who Is, and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. So David is brokenhearted, and so are all of his other people, because, yeah, they were on the run from a tyrant named Saul. But a lot of these other people that died this day, including Jonathan, were special to them, were heroes, and were the people of God. And they're mourning over them.